every order of worship, you'll see a gold insert. That is This Week in Unity, and it is a roadmap to upcoming classes and events. You're all invited to come to our Wellspring Wednesday program. Dinner is at 6, followed by a short worship service, and then this Wednesday, our feature presentation is a presentation entitled Holding in Trust, led by our own Board of Trustees as a follow-up class to the class that Kendall Gibbons led 2 weeks ago. I hope you can make Sunday, when we gather, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. This afternoon, let us keep in our prayers Katie Rivard, as tomorrow she will begin additional chemo and radiation therapy. This afternoon, we celebrate the life and mourn the death of Phil. Died last Saturday, and his memorial service is this coming Saturday, the 24th, at 5 p.m. We also mourn the death and celebrate the life of longtime Unity member Marjorie Marnie Becker, who died February 13th in a Tampa hospice with her two children at her side. Finally, we remember Alta Waggy, mother of the names which have been spoken and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for the lives that have touched ours. Will you join me in prayer and meditation? Holy One, source of light and darkness, sorrow and blessing, we come together today as one human family, one human race, broken, hurting, joyful, and yearning for wholeness. Spirit of love and life, untangle us from the web of separation and isolation that leaves us feeling alone and forgotten. Weave us back into community. Untangle us from the fear that clouds our vision and distorts reality. Restore our vision and weave us back into community. Holy One, help us journey toward ever greater wholeness as we speak our truths, claim our identities, and covenant once again to be a community of justice, healing, and love. May it be so. second reading is a dramatic monologue for the theater. Anne DeVere Smith interviewed Entezaki Shange on the phone, asking her about identity. And this is a piece called Desert that Entezaki Shange told to Anne DeVere Smith. So the interview was done on the phone at about 4 p.m. Philadelphia time. The only cue Entezaki gave about her physical appearance was that she took one earring off to talk on the phone. So on stage, we placed her upstage center in an armchair smoking. Then we placed her standing downstage. Identity. It is, in a way, it's a psychic sense of place. It's a way of knowing I'm not a rock or that tree. I'm this other living creature over here. And it's a way of knowing, no matter where I put myself, that I'm not necessarily what's around me. I am part of my surroundings, and I become separate from them. And it's being able to make those differentiations clearly that lets us have an identity. And what's inside saying, "I am who I am," just doesn't suffice for mere mortals. Because we do have identities. Identities as sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Greens, Americans, whatever that identity really means. We have identities as Unitarians, as Christians, as atheists, agnostic, as divorced, as widowed, as single, as queer, as straight, addicted, adopted, survivor. And I'm just scratching the surface of the number of different identities that are in this room. Perhaps it's difficult to publicly claim all of our identities, but we do claim many of them. We often name for ourselves who we are and what that means, rather than having someone else label us or create an identity for us. But what strikes me, what sticks with me, what sticks with me right now is this. How many of us who are white publicly identify as white, publicly claim that identity? And really, for that matter, what is a white identity? How is it made? How is it created? What is it? So it is those questions that I want to spend some time looking at this afternoon. And I'll be honest and upfront, in my experience as a white person exploring this question of white identity, I've often run into complicated emotional terrain. It's challenging. People are uncomfortable. So I'll name that upfront. And part of that is that there's the temptation, I think, for many of us who are white to say, "Well, what do you mean, white identity? You know, I'm a human being. I don't see colors." Or you might even say, "You know, I've just transcended race entirely. I don't even think about it anymore." But I would argue that there is such a thing as a white identity, and we need to look at it. Recently, the Star Tribune ran an article about Barack Obama's presidential bid. And the title of this article was, "Some Wonder, Is Barack Obama Black Enough?" I looked at it and I kept reading through the paper, finished it up, and then came back and saw that title again and actually 60 years later, when Dred Scott sued for his freedom because he had stayed in free states, the Supreme Court ruled that blacks were not intended to be included under the word citizen in the Constitution and can therefore claim none of the benefits of that document. Throughout the following decades, the story remained the same. More wealth and privilege accumulated in the hands of white people, often almost always at the expense of people of color. As one of the presenters in a video at the race exhibit remarked, you know, if the early colonists had just said, we need labor, and we have the power to enslave to get that labor, that would have been one thing. Because then when that power was gone, slavery would have been gone with it. But instead, America created, these early colonists created the idea that people of color, not just blacks, but people of color, were fundamentally different and inferior to white people. This prejudice, plus the power to enforce it, created institutional, systemic racism. And for over 350 years, our schools, laws, culture have reflected this. Despite gains in the civil rights movement, we still live in a country that is sick with the disease of racism. It may seem hard to believe, but I want to assure you that I am not up here to hit you over the head with guilt or shame or anything like that. You might be feeling some of that, but that is not my intent with sharing this with you. I am up here as a white person, as someone who is thinking about this history and this reality, saying that, yes, it's true that Unity has an anti-racism team and they are doing good work. But I want to recommit myself to doing this work, to becoming actively anti-racist. And I believe it is time for all of us to take that step. And I also believe that in doing this work, in moving toward an active anti-racist perspective and work, we'll mess up for one thing. I mean, it's hard work and we'll do it imperfectly, but in doing that work, we will move closer to the holy in a way that we never have before. There is possibility and power in this work. For white people, this work starts with naming the often invisible part of our identity. So it goes like this: hi, I'm Justin, I'm white. It's not my God-given identity, it's a socially constructed identity, but it's a part of who I am. The anti-racism work continues when we reclaim our own history and cultural heritage. I'm not just white, I'm a quarter Irish, I have Bohemian and German and Scottish in my family. And we can explore the complicated dynamics of racism by reading books such as Tim Wise's White Like Me, or Tandeika's Learning to Be White, or Paul Kibble's book, Uprooting Racism. For white people, anti-racism work deepens even more when we talk with other white people about race and white identity and the way that white privilege works in the world. Speaking of white privilege, there's a story I read in Tim Wise's book, White Like Me, that stuck with me. He shared this observation, that Arabs are being treated with suspicion since 9/11, while white men were not treated that way after Timothy McVeigh's bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City is entirely about white privilege. It feels clear to me, Timothy McVeigh, when he bombed the federal building, as horrible as that was within that church.